Par for the course, it's the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. A Medicare podcast shunned by hoarders everywhere. When the clerk asks if he needs a bag, he says, "I'm already married." Medicare expert Doug Jones.
Hey, hello, everybody. This is the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. You probably already knew that, though. I'm your Medicare expert for today, tomorrow, and the rest of the week. This is Doug Jones. Thanks to Drew McMillan for that magnificent entree, or intro, I guess it would be. He is sounding as good or better than he ever has. In case I haven't mentioned this before, Drew McMillan is a host of a Canadian TV show. You can't watch it on American television because you're a Yank. However, you can see it on their web page, which is the powerboattv.com. There are episodes of the show dating back about 10 years, but Drew became the host in 2020. So if you want to see what Drew looks like in the flesh, he's half American, half Canadian, because his mother did a lot of legal work when he was a kid to make sure that he and his siblings were all conferred with dual citizenship. So they're half American legally, as well as by breeding, and half Canadian legally. And I just love hanging around with them. They're all fantastic. Today is one of these episodes, which is going to be a collection of things. My house in Illinois is for sale, and every time somebody wants to look at it, I have to take a shovel and throw all of my paperwork into a closet and slam the door and hope that it doesn't come bursting open when they want to open that closet door and see what it looks like. But so what I have to talk about today is going to be just a collection of unrelated things, notes and things I've photocopied and printed out and so on and so forth. But Randy tells me that that's okay with him, that it's not going to be a problem not to have one specific episode content. So thank you, Randy Carson. And speaking of Randy Carson, how the heck are you doing today?
I'm good. I'm really good. I think that this will be actually a fun and interesting episode because we've got probably some mailbag. We've got maybe a lot of different things that you touch on. And I really like variety. So I'm actually looking forward to it very much.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. It just started raining here in Illinois. I want to also address a hanging chad that you left from a prior episode, which is the Navajo Code Talkers, the history of them and what their exploits were like in World War II in the Pacific. So hopefully we'll have time to get to that.
So I really hope so, because that's one of my major interests, and it troubles me that they're not as well known as they should be.
Well, they did fantastic work for us during a trying time, and they owe a debt of, or we owe them a debt of gratitude, but there aren't many of them left, I'll bet you. I mean, my dad was, as I say every chance I get, he showed up on Omaha Beach at 6:30 in the morning one day in June of 44, and he would have been, I think, 98. And he, at that time, he was like a 21-year-old master sergeant. So, even though those guys were pretty young, I don't think they're all lasting that long. So
I believe at last count, and I could be wrong, that there may be two original Code Talkers left, but I'm not sure.
That's even worse than I would have thought. I was hoping that there would be more, but, they had to be 18, 19 years old in order to serve. And then, what year would they have been used most intensely? Probably 45. So subtract 18 from 45 and then subtract all of that from 2020. And you got a really old dude on your hands there. So it's not surprising to me that there aren't very many of them left. I didn't know it was only going to be two of the originals. Well, anyway, I want to hear about that. So I'm just going to throw a few things on the table. One very sad event. I have to address this. I hate to start off the episode with a sad event, but The guy that I've been corresponding with feverishly for what seems like months, maybe years, Steve, and I variously called him a fan, an interested party, and then more recently I've called him a stalker a few times. He has come up with question after question after question about Medicare and the ins and outs and the nuances of certain Medicare plans and what happens if this and that and everything else. He has come up with some of the best questions that have caused me to do research, and it's really been a pleasure. The sad news I have is that Steve has hit a brick wall. I'm pretty sure he has run out of questions to ask. His latest message to me, which came in today, it says, hi. He's getting pretty familiar. It used to be Mr. Jones, sir. Now it's hi. He says, I do recall last year, around the time of my 65th birthday, these two guys came over unannounced and uninvited to sell me a Medicare Advantage plan. I didn't answer the door, so they spoke their sales pitch into my Ring doorbell. And he says, now, a while back, you talked about a gal whose podcast gave advice about how to deal with the open enrollment period, or AEP, at the end of the year, and it involved face masks and hair masks and painting of nails and bath bombs. And Randy was highly incensed that anybody would offer this kind of advice to professional insurance people. But Steve says, the gal whose podcast you were telling us about, how does she address the issue that she is selling a product that she probably doesn't qualify for? I'm guessing he means that the woman is too young. She's not age 65 by a long shot. He says, perhaps you could suggest that she could open a couple of buttons on her blouse when she is speaking with male clients. And I'm thinking he's looking back at that Ring doorbell instead of seeing two dopey insurance dudes out there on his porch yakking to him about Medicare Advantage plans. He's thinking that this woman could package the product that she's selling in a more attractive way. And so here's my response. Come on, Steve, you must be running out of questions. I said, I'm a big fan of open blouse buttons, but this is only going to get me points with part of the audience. Back to the drawing board with you. And I didn't expect him to respond so quickly. He said, okay, well, you never did tell me when a Part D plan has the option of using a mail order pharmacy, and which mail order pharmacy is it? Or can you find out which one they use? And I thought I addressed this in a podcast episode, but I said I did in fact answer which mail order pharmacy a PDP plan uses. PDP means prescription drug plan. It uses the one that the insurance company in question owns. So for instance, Humana has their own mail order service, headquartered in Phoenix, by the way. WellCare uses CVS Caremark, which is a part of their corporate family. And all the other companies do the same thing. They either own or subscribe to a mail order service that they use exclusively. His other question was, can you use a mail order pharmacy or drugstore or mix them up? And my answer to that was, as a plan subscriber, you can go back and forth. You can use mail order when you want to, and you can go to the drugstore whenever you want to do that. So I was disappointed with Steve's performance in getting questions that were mentally challenging onto my printer. And frankly, I'm hoping he bounces back. I'm hoping that he hasn't completely run out of material, because I think the podcasts are a lot more interesting when questions that challenge our knowledge level arrive at the offices here of the Medicare for the Lazy Man. Let's see, what else do I have here? You'd think I would know what I have. I have a question. This opens up a discussion that Randy and I have had several times. A gentleman wrote early this morning and he said, I'm watching your map. I'm hoping that you will be adding Indiana soon. Do you think you will be in Indiana by November of this year? Thanks. And I said, why don't we open up Indiana right now? Now, the whole thing is that we're going to turn every state in America green on our map. Our original plan was to take our time and do it in a way that would be fascinating, automated, and really, really quick to deal with. But the preparation time for each state was just too lengthy. We would have, we'd probably be in the nursing home before we get to state number 35, and we'd still have 15 states to go. So Randy and I kind of made a business decision. We don't want to turn away anybody who wants our help with Medicare supplement plans. So we are going to turn every state in the map green very shortly, because we're going to be prepared to offer a Medicare supplement plan from a great company to anyone who wants to buy one and who's qualified to buy one in any state in the country. Now, this means that each one for the unfamiliar states is going to be a little awkward, and we're going to have paperwork to go back and forth with, and it's going to be a little confusing for the time being, but eventually we will help everybody who wants our help, and we will not turn away anyone. So that includes anybody in Indiana. So I said, if you have, first step, may I ask you to complete the attached questionnaire so I get to know a little bit about your situation. Should take you about 3 minutes. I've got a questionnaire. Now, Randy's preparing a much better version of this questionnaire. And eventually we'll be able to say, please go back to the map. Notice that your state is green. Click on it and fill out Randy's questionnaire, and then click a button to send it to me. But for today, for Indiana, I sent an email with an attached questionnaire, which I forgot to attach. So the next thing I wrote was, oops, attached is the questionnaire I mentioned. So we will ask you for basic information, most of which you're going to know off the top of your head. And when you give me that basic information, like your date of birth and all that stuff, then I'm going to be able to tell you what my recommended Medicare supplement plans would cost you. And you will then be able to ask me questions or decide whether or not to go ahead with the purchase of a Medicare supplement plan based on my recommendations. And that's pretty much all there is to it. Never any obligation to buy. If you're looking with other people, for instance, I had a correspondence with a gentleman yesterday who said he wanted to make his decision yesterday evening, and one of the factors was going to be a conversation with his family insurance man. And I wrote back to him and said, look, these people that have served you well for years in the past deserve to have their opinions taken into account. So by all means, have a conversation with your family agent. I applaud loyalty to those who have done well for me in the past. However, choosing the best drug plan, I cautioned him, requires a somewhat different approach. His family agent might be the most honorable guy in the world, but he might only be contracted with two or three drug plan insurance companies. And if he only goes to two or three companies for a drug plan quote for a prospective client, like this gentleman I'm talking about, he might miss the opportunity to give the client the best deal going, which would be a company that he doesn't have a contract with. So I suggested that he use the steps in my book, Medicare for the Lazy Man 2020. Those steps, I think, are in Chapter 9, and he should ask his agent to do it, if he doesn't want to do it, to go to the federal government website and follow my steps to find a list of the drug plans from cheapest to most expensive. And then he knows, at least if he's going to pick one of the cheap ones, if the agent doesn't have a contract with that one, then too bad. He's losing out on a couple of bucks. No big deal, really. It's not that much commission. But the important thing is that the prospect, in this case, the person who wrote to me, will get the most cost-effective prescription drug plan. And here's the cool thing. He can change a year from now. Or actually, you can change at the end of this year, because AEP, starting October 15th, means anybody can change any Medicare Advantage plan or any prescription drug plan to a new plan to start January 1st. So if a guy picks a plan in September for an October 1st effective date, after October 15th, he can go right back to the drawing board and pick a different one. I don't know why he would, but it would be possible and legal for him to do so. So I don't know. I think I should stop yakking now and let Randy get on with the program content that he wants to finish up from a prior episode. What about it?
Well, as you said, this is based on a hanging chad from one of our prior episodes. I had mentioned the concept of the Navajo Code Talkers and what type of a really awesome contribution they made to the country during World War II. So those of you who aren't familiar with them, I'm going to just read a little short piece to familiarize you. And it was based on the need in the Marines during World War II to have an unbreakable code to communicate battle orders and such. And so every World War II combatant appreciated that need for an unbreakable code that would help them communicate when protecting their operational plans. The U.S. Marines knew where to find that, and that happened to be at the Navajo Nation. Marine Corps leadership selected 29 Navajo men who have since been christened the Navajo Code Talkers, who then created a code based on the complex unwritten Navajo language. They used word association and so forth in order to communicate over the radio battle orders, which basically then the Marines carried out. During the battle month, actually just about a month-long battle for Iwo Jima, for example, six Navajo Code Talker Marines successfully transmitted more than 800 messages during that battle without error. Marine leadership later noted after the battle that the Code Talkers were critical to that victory at Iwo Jima. And at the end of the war, by the way, the Navajo Code remained unbroken. And the interesting side note to this is that every Navajo Code Talker, from what I can tell, I'm not an expert, but from what I can tell, every Navajo Code Talker had another Marine with him during the battles in a variety of different places they went. And if there was any danger that the Navajo Marine was going to be captured by the Japanese, it was the job of the other Marine to kill him. So, there you go. It's an amazing story. I'm extremely glad that they did what they did. I'm very respectful that they did what they did. And these people deserve all the accolades that they can get.
I agree. Now, there's a little bit more to their methodology. I've always been fascinated with the fact that we crack codes of our enemies in ways that we managed to keep secret, so the enemies weren't aware that we cracked codes. And we knew that if they were able to crack our codes, that would cost American lives. And so the Code Talkers obviously were an extreme method of protecting the messages that were being transmitted. But the interesting thing was, I always thought, as I heard about them at an early age, and I always thought that they would just say the equivalent of English words in their language, which is Dine, I believe they pronounce it, D-I-N-E. And I thought they would just say, okay, if an officer said, okay, I want 10 men to scout the area around the big hill, that they would just say that in the Navajo language. And then it would be, spoken to another Navajo on site, and that Navajo would say, okay, we'll have that done right away. That's not the case at all. They actually...
No, actually it is. You're absolutely correct, Doug. The only language that they had to invent was for things that did not exist in the Navajo language. So for example, like an airplane or a bomber or what have you, they would come up with a metaphor in their language for that, like a shiny bird or a steel bird or something like that, for words that did not exist in the Navajo language.
Well, that would make sense. That's a little at odds with what I understood, which was that they used substitute words and then translated them into Navajo. So even if they were doing a direct Navajo to English translation, an enemy listening in would still not be able to figure out what he was saying for tactical reasons. I don't know if I'm right. I know that's a little different than the picture you've drawn here. Frankly, I don't know, and we're about to lose the last two guys that could tell us what their involvement was. Years ago, I knew that we had a branch of the family that I hadn't really had a lot of contact with, but I received a photograph and a one-page biography of a guy I never knew. I was the grandparent I was closest to was my mother's father, and he had a brother who owned one of the two cap and gown companies for all graduates of high schools and colleges and Catholic school eighth grades and all that. So I met him, but didn't really, I wasn't really close to him. I was very close to my grandfather, but I never heard until long after my grandfather had died that he had a brother who was a lieutenant in the army and was invading Okinawa on day one, which was April 1st of 1945, and he was killed on April 2nd. And there was this whole fascinating biography of this guy. I never knew he existed. I don't know how that happens unless the loss of a life in battle is somehow so painful that people don't want to spend a lot of time wallowing in that pain by talking about him. But anyway, that's my only direct connection. Otherwise, all the people I knew, my father, his brother, they were all in the ETO, the European Theater of Operations. And so to hear about what went on in the Pacific is interesting to me because it's not a thing I grew up hearing about. So anyway, thanks for sharing that, Randy.
Oh, absolutely. Glad to do it. The other thing I'll just kind of end up with is for those of you who make it to Arizona, there is a Navajo Code Talkers Museum. I'm not sure whether it's totally finished yet, but if it's not now, it's in progress in Tuba City. So if you ever get to Arizona and have a, you know, basically a day or two to make a trip, go to Tuba City and check out the Navajo Code Talkers Museum. There's more in it than just that, but it's well worth the trip.
Now tell me where Tuba City is. I should know, but I don't know exactly where it is.
Well, let me look. I'm not sure.
Okay.
I have.
I'm not the only one then.
I live by my GPS, so let's see where Tuba City is.
Well, I got to tell you, I know it's not a hotbed of tourist activity. It's
No, it's not. I'm gonna see where Tuba City is here as related to the rest of the world. I'm still within the city here. Let me pan out a little bit here and see what I can see.
Well, if this is up near the Navajo Reservation, it's going to be chilly in the wintertime.
They want to plan
their visit for, warmer weather, I think.
Yeah, I mean, Tuba City is definitely up in the north. I'm trying to get my thing to pan out here, and I won't do it. But Tuba City is definitely up in the northern Arizona. So it's going to be a little – oh, here we go. I found out how to pan out. You'd think I'd know that, wouldn't you?
Well, I rely on you for all this technical knowledge, and so.
Well, I'll tell you where Tuba City is. It is, I can't gauge the distance, but it is some small distance, maybe 100 miles, maybe not quite that far, due east of the Grand Canyon.
Due east of the Grand Canyon, okay. So, Shiprock. I bet Shiprock is in that area.
I can give you a lot of smaller ones.
Yeah,
Winter Springs. Cayenta.
No, not doing any good for me.
I've been to Cayenta, but it's due east of the Grand Canyon North Rim.
Okay.
So it would definitely be worth the trip. You could go ahead and do the Grand Canyon, which is well worth the trip.
Absolutely.
And then do the Navajo Code Talkers. And to put you in context of another city you might know is Flagstaff. It's northeast of Flagstaff.
Wow, there you go. Well, I would suggest that one plan that trip for warmer weather, say April through September, May through September would be ideal because that's when the weather is going to be pretty cool, but not cold and not hot. Well, anyway, thanks again for sharing that with us. I think those guys really deserve all the accolades they can get, and it's too bad that they've dropped away from us over the years, but I'm pretty much finished for today, I believe. I can't, I printed out some stuff that I was going to talk about on dark green paper, And now that I'm in my cone of silence, which doesn't have any light in it, I can't read what I was talking about.
You can't read your dark green paper.
Exactly right. So anyway, I'm going to thank Randy. I'm going to thank Drew McMillan, our intro announcer. And I'm going to suggest that you might want to go to Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com and buy Medicare for the Lazy Man 2020. If you're on Amazon, it comes in Audible, paperback, or Kindle versions. And you might find it very helpful if you're facing Medicare decision time. I'm hoping you'll find it helpful because I'm going to be writing the next year's version of the book within a few weeks. And when I finish with that, I'm going to take a deep breath and then wait for the accolades to roll in. And I'm hoping an accolade or two roll in, but that's what we've been doing for 4 years. I think we started with the 2018 version. And so the 2021 version will be fourth, I think, in the series. So with that, I'm going to say adieu, which is Frenchy for goodbye. And we'll look forward to seeing you another time. Thank you very much for joining us.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you for joining us. You have just spent, about 32 and a half minutes with Doug Jones, the anti-insurance insurance guy, sole proprietor, I'm going to start calling you, of MedicareForTheLazyMan.com.
I like sole proprietor because it has more syllables.
Yes, it does.
It makes me sound even more important.
Yes, and everybody in Europe understands the concept of sole proprietor, but I'm going to start using it again here to bring it back to popularity.
Wonderful. Thank you for joining us. See you next time.